Hello and welcome to End of Life University Seminar Series. This is your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I'm glad that you've chosen to join us today for a very important conversation. The subject we'll be discussing today is cremation, and it's something I realized that I actually don't know very much about, and really probably the only thing I know about it I learned from watching 6 Feet Under a number of years ago on HBO. So I realized that's probably not very accurate knowledge about cremation. So I'm very excited to welcome two guests on our show today who are going to tell us everything we need to know about cremation. So our first guest is Pam Gears. And Pam became a licensed funeral director in 2000 and holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Business Administration. She has been assisting families in advanced planning and cemetery development and memorialization since 1994. Pam is currently employed at Bowie Funeral Home in St. Charles, Missouri. And I'm also welcoming Colby Hitchcock. Colby holds a degree in funeral service technology from Northwest Mississippi Community College and a certificate in postmortem reconstructive surgery from Fountain National Academy of Professional Embalming Skills. He is a CANA certified crematory operator, and CANA is the Cremation Association of North America. Colby currently serves as the care teams and property manager for Bowie Funeral Home of St. Charles, Missouri. So Pam and Colby, welcome and thank you so much for being here today.
Well, it's good to be here, Dr. Wyatt.
Yeah, Dr. Wyatt, thanks for having us.
Oh, I'm just really happy to have this chance to kind of pick your brains about cremation because and this is really for my benefit as much as our listeners, as I said, since it's a subject I myself don't know very much about. But I understand just from what I'm hearing in the news that cremation is becoming a more common choice for people for after death disposition. Is that true from your experience?
Yes, we are seeing definitely an increase in cremation, and about a third of the U.S. population is currently opting for cremation. And according to the statistics that they place out there for us, it's projected to climb to about 44% by the year 2015, and even as much as 58%. By the year 2025, and that's according to the Cremation Association of North America, which is CANA. So we here in the Midwest, we are actually seeing about a 43% of our families are choosing cremation.
That's a lot higher than I would have guessed.
Yes, it is. But one of the things that I like to stress with those numbers, even with more and more families choosing cremation, the one thing that we're seeing is of that 43%, we're still seeing about 75 to 80% of that number choosing some type of a service. So, I think we'll talk a little bit about the myths that are out there when we get into this. But what we're seeing is they're choosing cremation, but they're wanting some type of a service. And they want to maybe do things a little differently than what has been done in the past. And with the baby boomers out there, that generation has been known to, do things differently. So it's not going to be different in death. And so what we're seeing is they're wanting to arrange their funeral. They're wanting to do personalization and things a little bit outside the box. So that's where we come in and kind of become like a little bit of party planners instead of the traditional, what people think of in the funeral industry as, the way it's been done before. We're seeing people saying, I want something. I'm just not sure what I want. I want it to be about the person, or I want it to be about me and things that were important to me. And I think that's where cremation gives us a lot of different options.
And that answers one of the questions that that I've had, because through my experience with hospice, I've come to believe that it is really important to have some sort of a service, some sort of either a funeral or a memorial service, a way for the bereaved to say goodbye and to have resolution. And so that's always been a concern I've had about cremation. How soon after death does cremation have to be performed? Are there laws about it, about that?
Well, Dr. Wyatt, I think I'll jump in and speak to this.
Okay.
There are laws concerning the time frame at which a person can be cremated, and they vary from state to state and province, and there's even some county and city regulations. But basically here in Missouri, there's a minimum time from which the death has occurred to cremation, so there's like a waiting period. But with the advent of refrigeration and different things, you can actually wait a week to 2 weeks to perform the cremation, and to have a cremation performed in the state of Missouri, you require a completed death certificate or a letter from the doctor or the medical examiner, whichever one's going to be certifying the death, that you can go ahead and perform the cremation.
So I didn't realize that you could wait that length of time. And so do people choose to still have a viewing of some sort if they're also choosing cremation? Do they choose, is it possible to have a viewing of the body?
Yes, and I'm glad you asked that question, because when we're speaking with folks, either on an individual basis or educating a group in a seminar, you know, the question that comes up so much is, what can you do with cremation? And basically, there's three different ways that you can do cremation. And the first one, you actually can have an embalmed body. You can have a gathering, and it's called different things depending on what part of the United States you're in, but some people call it a visitation. Some people will call it, a gathering, but the body is present. And in those cases, they'll have the body present. People come and show their support and have that visitation, and the cremation is completed after that portion. And it can be combined with. Sometimes it's done at a church. Sometimes it's done at a funeral home. There's many different variations that can happen with that actual service. So that is with an embalmed body. The second type of service that people choose is a cremation with what we call a memorial service or a gathering. Some people call it a celebration of life. Some people... that can be done funeral home, church, a park, an outside under a tent, just a graveside service. You know, that is what they're calling, the cremation, but without the body present. And so in substitution, sometimes people will have, large photos of the person, a video tribute that will be playing. They will have, we have really seen an increase in personalizing the room. We've seen things where people set up the visitation. We had one where it was set up like they were a huge Jimmy Buffett fan. So we had a tiki hut, and we had all Adirondack chairs. We've had where they're a hunter and they bring in their, their hunting paraphernalia with the duck decoys and, they're looking to make it about the person. So we see that is becoming more and more what we're seeing, not just your traditional, just a room where it's very awkward and to walk into, but making it about the person, things that were important to the person. And then third is what some people call a cremation with no service or a direct cremation. And again, out of what we're seeing, 75 to 80% want something. So there's still a small percentage that maybe it's because with having vacation homes and people having places in Florida and Arizona, that maybe their family is in another part of the country. So they may be taking the cremated remains back to a different location. So we do see some of that, but that's kind of what we're seeing with, you know, just options for families. But mm-hmm. the first time we sit down with them, they really are looking for a roadmap. They're kind of looking for education on, well, what can we do? What is normal? What's not normal? And one of the things we like to do is just educate them. And whether they use us or they're going to a different part of the country, we ask them to, you know, get the facts so you will be able to make an educated decision for yourself or for your loved one. And, you know, we also give them questions to ask when they're out, you know, shopping. With the baby boomers, they're used to using the internet to shop, and they're used mm-hmm. to, you know, looking for things. So we try to kind of be a resource because there's a lot of good resources that we are familiar with, and we like to give people information so that they'll be able to make the best decision for what's right for them. And so it doesn't become a drive-through service, and it doesn't become just a cookie-cutter way to do things. You know, we kind of like to give them their choices.
Oh, well, that's very interesting, and it's nice to hear that you're able to provide that resource even for people who might be on the move and not be able to use the services in your state. But it's nice that you're there to offer the education and information, because that's so important. And let's see. I have the question. This might be for you, Colby. Of how long? I'm just curious. How long does it actually take, the cremation process? How long does that last?
Well, typically, the cremation will last between 2.5 to 3 hours, and that's the amount of time it takes for the heat to do the reduction of the human body. Mm-hmm. And then there's a cool down period. So, but the physical process is about 2.5 to 3 hours.
Are there ever families that ask if they can be present during the cremation itself? Is that ever done? Or?
Well, that's a big part. I'm a big, you know, proponent of that, because I do believe that if they're participatory in their service, you know, their end of life service, that it helps them with that process of the grieving process as far as moving through. And at our crematory here, we do offer what we call a witness cremation, and we provide that at no charge. It's we just have to set up times. And the family can come in and they can have a little more time, and then actually watch us place their loved one into the crematory, and then start the process. And we have some religious affiliations that are even more participatory, where the members of the family actually take place in that the start of the process. And one that comes to mind would be the Hindu community, where they have usually the eldest son will actually step forward and initiate the cremation process. And we have that ability at our funeral home here, and I find that there's Protestants that are just as interested in being part of that process. So we do. It's difficult to bring up to a family, but we do offer that to them.
Huh, that's interesting. It's just something I was curious about, to know if families ever chose that. So it's interesting to know that's another one of the options that might be a good fit for some people. And So that answers one of my questions. And oh, also probably for you, Colby, is just the remains themselves, is it all just ashes at the end of that cremation process, or are there still pieces of bone left in the remains?
Right. There's basically, after the cremation is complete, you have the reduction of elements in the body, and basically there is bone, and it resembles bone. And at that time, the cremated remains are placed into a what's called a processor, and it takes those bony fragments and reduces them further to a almost the consistency of a anywhere between like a crushed coral or a powder. In between that would be the consistency. But they are indeed, some portions are recognizable afterward. And one of the reasons for the processing is to reduce that, and before we present those back to the family.
And then how does the family receive the ashes? Is it in some box, or what kind of container?
Well, we have a plethora of options as far as what the family receives their cremated remains in. And you can choose anything from a black, what they call a black temporary plastic, up to a bronze eagle statue urn, or it's limitless, the possibilities. But we would say at a minimum that if the family did not choose a container, that what they would receive them in was a black plastic, a box, and the cremated remains inside are contained in a heavy plastic bag and secure within the box.
And then I don't know if you do you know, Colby, what the laws are about the disposition of the ashes, where people can place ashes if they decide they want to spread the ashes?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because a lot of people, if I was going to say this is probably the most important, pardon me, most important area would be the transportation and the disposition. All state and local, there's requirements for each state, and locality has different requirements that speaks to the scattering of cremated remains. The only one I can speak to consistently, because it's the EPA, and that's when scattering in the open ocean. And it's a three miles from land rule. And but as far as each state has different requirements, especially dealing with waterways and lakes and things of that nature. And the other thing would be the transportation of the cremated remains. A lot of people will say, okay, I want to fly to Florida. What do I need to do? So we educate them on basically the transportation. They can take the cremated remains on the airplane with them. But something that people do need to know is that they will be scanned with the TSA when they do their, you know, regular scanning of people that come on the airplane. If their container that they're contained in is not able to be scanned, then the TSA agent will not open the container. However, they will not let it on the airplane either. So something to think about if you have a heavy bronze, or if you have a granite urn and you know you're going to be traveling, you can go to your local funeral home and tell them what you're trying to accomplish, and they will get you something that's suitable for that process. Otherwise, you will get to the airport and you will not be able to travel with those. So that's a big piece of it. And there's also some transportation paperwork that you need to present. And those will all be provided by the crematory you choose. So that's a big piece of it. And also flying into different countries, you can get on the internet, which has a vast amount of knowledge for everyone, and find out the different countries. If you want to bring cremated remains into the country, some still require, it's just like bringing in a human body. You still require certified copies of death certificates and copy of a non-contagious disease letter. Even though that these people have been cremated, they still require these items to bring into a different country. So those are all things to think about.
Yeah, so much more than they would have even imagined. And so I'm wondering, Pam, I know you kind of do the counseling and preparation ahead of time, it sounds like, and education with people. So if I were to come in and wanted to kind of make arrangements ahead of time just for myself, would I sit down with you and review all of this information about cremation?
You would. We have, like many, many funeral homes across the United States, they have directors that help someone when there's been a death, and they also have directors that specialize in helping people get a roadmap and putting their personal wishes and desires down in advance. And, you know, they're called different things depending, you know, family service directors or planning counselors. And basically what we do is kind of like what we're doing here. We sit down, we talk to them about their lifestyle and what's good for them and individually. You know, we kind of all know, I mean, I have a 94-year-old father, and if you talk to him, he'll say, oh, just throw me in the backyard, or I don't need anything. Don't make a fuss about me. And I hear that a lot. But we all know that the funeral or the service or whatever they're wanting is not really about them at that point. It's about those they leave behind. So we kind of try to point out, you know, all of the different things and helping to get that roadmap in order for whoever it is, whether they have a large family or a small family, we try to get them to prepare. And there's several pieces to that. One is getting the vital information that they would need at the time of death for a death certificate. So there's kind of some, you know, so there's some mechanical parts, which is, you know, the Social Security, your mother's maiden name, things of that nature that are needed for a death certificate. So we help them with that. But more importantly, we try to find out what it is that they want, you know, what is going to be good, you know, for them. And so we start out, and again, it's an education process. A lot of times I'll have folks, and one person will say, well, I think I want traditional, and the spouse says they want cremation. And we kind of work through all of the different questions that come up. You know, one of the big myths that we see is a lot of times people are like, oh, well, with cremation, it's just cremation. And we just either take them home or we scatter them. And that's, I think, one of the biggest myths that we see. Although scattering is an option, there's a lot of other options. Right now, we see a trend, like if someone does want to scatter, what they do is maybe take a little small portion, what they call a little keepsake urn, and maybe they had a favorite spot in the mountains or the ocean or a vacation home, and they want to take a portion and scatter it. But we're finding a lot of folks then still want some type of a permanent thumbprint here on Earth, some type of a permanent place that they could go to remember. And I have worked with cemeteries. Our organization has a cemetery. But what we're seeing is, again, we're back to like the people wanting something, but maybe not wanting to follow what people think of as a traditional, you know, just a traditional burial. I know more and more places are putting in what they call cremation options or cremation walkways. They're putting in things that are that are a little less traditional, but they're still a way to remember. Right now, there are things such as benches where people can actually sit on the bench, but it serves as your whole, you know, it serves as the urn and the canister, and the names can be engraved on the outside. We're seeing maybe a tree planted where the people can have a tree plaque with the tree, and then they have a way to inter the cremated remains down into the earth. So we're kind of, you know, cremation is a process that's been around for thousands of years, and we kind of think it's just another method of preparing the deceased for some type of memorialization. Now, it can mean anything from, you know, it can mean a burial. It can mean a columbarium or a mausoleum. But again, cremation is just, it's not the substitute for a funeral. It's the form of disposition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad that you're bringing this up, because my own mother died a little over a year ago, and she chose a traditional burial. And for one thing, she planned all of her funeral arrangements in advance and paid for everything in advance. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, it was so helpful to my brother and I to know that we were following her wishes exactly, because she had already planned it out and made all the decisions for us, and it really made that time much easier for us to go through. But this year, on the one-year anniversary of her death, I went back to the cemetery where she's buried and took flowers and spent some time there, and suddenly I realized, oh my gosh, would I be able to do this if she had been cremated? And I realized how important it was for me to have that physical place in my mind where I could go and feel like I was visiting her. And so you just answered that question, that it's still possible to create that, but we have to be creative about our ideas of how we find that spot as a memorial for our loved ones.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is so important, because we, you know, like when I was talking about becoming, you know, a guide, or, you know, sometimes we're like a party planner or a person that is helping others through the process. This is just a really short little story, but years ago when I started, a lady that I had helped said she wanted cremation, and she just wanted to take her husband home and put him on her dresser. And of course, at that time, I was like, okay, because I didn't want to act like I was pushy or trying to give her, you know, something that she didn't want. But what I found from that day, about 45 days after the cremation, she called and she was crying and asked if she could come back and visit with me. And of course I said yes. And when she did, she told me, she said, you know, I thought I wanted my husband at home. And I have a daughter who's in college, and my daughter became very cold and very, you know, just very short with me. And we were so, so close. And finally she broke down and she said, Mom, I know Dad is not, you know, her belief was she was a Christian, she had a Christian belief. And she said, I believe Dad's in a better place and he's not in that urn on your dresser. She said, but for me, I'm uncomfortable because I need a place to talk to him and to visit. And she goes, I took a test the other day and I wanted to go talk to Dad, and I felt uncomfortable going into your bedroom, and I realized I need something. And so from that day forward, I said, you know, I have an obligation to at least give people options, let them know what's out there. And, you know, for one person, it may be perfectly fine to take them home. But for another, they need a place where they can remember, and they need a place to go, and they need, you know, they need this. And so I decided, you know, I would try to provide, you know, the peace of mind to family members to at least give them options. And I thought it was really interesting because, you know, the lady kind of had this awakening. She said, you know, I never thought about anybody but myself. I thought I wanted him with me, but I realized I have three children. He was kind of a younger man and had friends. Who else might need to come and visit? So it's interesting with cremation. You know, you can be cremated, but you still can have a permanent spot, and it doesn't have to be a traditional burial. It could be many, many things. But we are seeing more folks also ask us on the anniversaries. You know, could we do a balloon release? I had someone the other day that wanted to have, we had a dove release ceremony, and they wanted to do that at the gravesite on the anniversary of the death. So again, it's about if you haven't gone through it before, you'd have nothing to compare it to. So we kind of try to guide folks and let them know things that have been done in the past. And, you know, every day we're looking at new ideas for families.
And I'm sure you are emphasizing as well what I was just saying, what a benefit it is when we make our own plans. I mean, when we at least take the time to let our families know what we think we would like and to do a little bit of planning and investigating in advance, so it's not just all on the family's shoulders after a death occurs to make every decision.
Correct. I mean, that is the one thing that a lot of times folks, when they're left to make those decisions, when they're emotional and, you know, we compare it to it, a lot of times it takes months to plan a wedding, and people spend months with all the details and going through this. And we find that sometimes funeral plans have as many decisions to be made as a wedding does, but yet families are left with sometimes 24 to 72 hours to put all those pieces into place and to try to find something that they think their loved one would have wanted. We really encourage to, if they can, to get the person involved with their wishes, because then I think it makes the whole family feel like they've honored that person's wishes. In the past, a lot of folks would find things in safety deposit box or in family Bibles or, you know, in a drawer after the person's funeral was over. And they're like, you know, we didn't really do what they wanted. So we encourage open communication, you know, ahead of time, just trying to, you know, there's no right or wrong way. And with cremation, that's one of the things, you know, there's no two services that are the same. So there's, you know, we tell people if they say, well, can we do this? And Colby has a perfect saying. What do you say to that, Colby, when people ask you, can you do this?
I tell everyone that, you know, we're not the funeral police. And as long as it's ethical and it's legal, we'll do it. I mean, it's not, there's not, you know, we don't judge. And yes, if it's ethical and legal, we have no trouble trying to accommodate these requests.
Well, that brings up for me, Colby, I wanted to ask you, I mentioned that my previous knowledge about cremation all probably came from watching the show 6 Feet Under. I don't know if you were familiar with that, but about
yes.
The funeral home. But there was a scene where a person's ashes got switched and the family received the wrong ashes. And I was just curious, is that even really possible, or was that just something they created for drama on the show?
Well, I think Hollywood has definitely done its best to shake up the thoughts of various different industries. I would say that you would have to almost make that happen, if that makes sense. The way at which a cremation is conducted, you have several different steps. And to ensure the positive identification of that person, we have these little stainless steel discs. And after the family has viewed their loved one, and when it actually comes down to the time to do the cremation, this person is assigned this number. And then from that point on, it's a little medallion. Think of it like a small dog tag, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it has this number. And basically that physically accompanies the individual throughout the process. So when they are placed into the crematory, this disc is actually placed inside with them. When the cremated remains are removed, that disc, which made it through the cremation process, accompanies those cremated remains throughout the process. And when they're placed into their urn, that actual disc, that medallion, is actually placed inside the urn, and it has, like ours has our name on it, like Valley Funeral Homes and Crematory, so that if for some unforeseen reason, 20 years down the road, somebody was to find these cremated remains, they would have this number on them. They could bring it to us, and we can cross-reference that number and tell them who that is. So for Hollywood, it gets people thinking. But on a realistic level, it would be very, very hard to do.
Well, I assumed that was probably something very sensationalized for that show. But then, you know, when it brings up questions and makes you wonder about certain things. And I was wondering, are there other myths that you're aware of that people commonly come in, questions that they come and ask, or misconceptions that they have about cremation, for either one of you to answer?
Pam, do you want to take one or two? And I'll take one or two. I have my two favorites.
Okay. Well, sure. Well, you know, one of the things, a lot of times, there's many reasons people choose cremation. Sometimes people will say cremation is less expensive than traditional burial, and they're basing all of their choices on that. And actually, cremation, it can be less expensive option for families if they're working on a budget, things like that. But as we kind of addressed earlier, sometimes cremation can be, you know, if you choose to go ahead and have embalming prior to cremation, or you're doing a full visitation, sometimes the cost is about the same as a traditional funeral. So it just depends on what you're wanting. You know, as far as that myth goes, you know, that's one of the big ones that, you know, that we see. Colby, I know you have, you know, a couple of myths that you always hear.
Well, the one I like is, it's not really a myth or as much as it's a perception, being in the funeral industry, or the profession, I might say, you get the question all the time, well, should I be embalmed or should I be cremated? And I'm like, well, what, you know, you're comparing apples to oranges. And I always try to educate people that they should see cremation as the same thing as basically burying in the cemetery. It's a form of disposition. It's what you do after you've had some sort of time to have a service. And that's one of my sticking points, is that, you know, you should not look at them as the same. There's no reason why you can't have both. Like, I view cremation as it's a step of disposition. Now, you can even go further by taking those cremated remains and then placing them either, you know, in a tree ring, like Pam spoke of, or taking a portion of them and scattering them. But that's my main one, is trying to get the lingo, get people to understand that there's a huge difference in what they're asking when they ask that question. And the second one that comes to mind all the time is, well, it's green, it's eco-friendly. And to be honest with you, that is a myth. It's you got to think about the fossil fuels that are used in conducting a cremation, whether it be propane or natural gas. And then you also need to think about your discharges from the crematory, which would be carbon monoxide, mercury, which that's in our dental fillings, and these are all things that are discharged into the atmosphere. So really, if you step back and look at it, you know, cremation is no more ecologically friendly than earth burial would be.
That's such a good point to make. And I'm sure, I think that is a very common misconception that people have. People assume that, as you said, that it's green or more eco-friendly. And so it's really good for people who are very concerned about that to know the truth about it.
Well, I tell people the only way to be truly green would be to, you know, to have and bury the individual in either a shroud or a biodegradable container. And then even when you're excavating the grave, you need to do it by hand, you know, because then you're not using machinery and burning those fossil fuels. I mean, that if you want to get to the elemental green, you know, eco-friendly, that's taking it all the way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that does remind me, if a person chooses cremation without embalming, is there a shorter time frame for the cremation to occur? Is there a law about that, like how quickly the cremation has to occur?
Well, there's a law on the Missouri books that's, you got to have disposition within 24 hours of death, unless you either have embalming or you have refrigeration, and it goes back.
Oh, okay.
So that tends to give you the necessary time to plan and to get the paperwork in order. But yes, that's what the law states. You got to have 24 hours. After death, you got to have disposition. But when you have either the embalming, which, as you know, temporarily inhibits the decomposition, or the refrigeration, which does the same thing, those you're able to postpone that 24-hour window.
Okay. All right. That was just a question that came up for me. And then I guess this one would be for Pam. Do you ever see cases where an individual has maybe made arrangements in advance for cremation, or either for one choice or another, and that the family members after the death don't feel comfortable honoring those wishes? Are there ever conflicts like that arise?
Sure. I mean, there are times, you know, from time to time, folks will, I mean, want to change something that someone has done, and just depending on, you know, what the changes are, it can be done. I mean, there are times when someone, and sometimes we'll see that the person, for instance, with cremations, sometimes they arrange a direct cremation because they don't want to be a bother, they don't want to, you know, to do that. But maybe there are children involved that they're like, they need something. They want to add something. And that can be done. Now, if they have a pre-arrangement and maybe they did, say they had a cremation, but there's someone that is in disagreement with that, a child that is in disagreement with the cremation. That's where we would, because it's an irreversible process, we would have to get the children to sign off before we do the cremation if there was a dispute. Colby, you may want to comment on that as well, but I mean, in rare cases, until we get it figured out, we would not go ahead and do the cremation if someone was in disagreement with that.
Mm-hmm. I see what you mean, because it's, as you said, it's irreversible. So mm-hmm.
if you have six children, or do you have six siblings, and they all have what they call an equal right to the parent, and five of them say we're doing cremation and one doesn't, that raises concern, because so what we the way we operate here is that we want everyone on the same, we want all six children to say, yes, we will do this cremation.
Mm-hmm.
Because legally, it requires one person with that equal right, but that's just one of the differences in how we conduct cremations to someone else. You're limited by different laws, but you're allowed to, you can make your requirements more stringent than the law.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we do in several instances to basically make sure that the family is protected with their wishes is basically what we're trying to avoid, is any conflict and getting involved in that conflict. This is what we require, so everyone needs to sign off on that, and that's how we do it here.
Well, and that underscores for me the need for communication and how important that is for families to really sit down and talk about it. And part of this entire series that I'm doing is really to encourage people to look at these issues before they die and have these conversations with their families in advance, so to help prevent some of the problems that might arise later on, the miscommunication and to make the whole process a little smoother for everyone involved just by being able to talk it out in advance and have everyone express their wishes ahead of time. I'm sure that you would agree with that.
That's probably the most important piece of it all,
is
everybody being on the same page as far as end-of-life decisions. And
right. I mean, that's what we encourage. It's just, we try to make things easier, you know, for the family members at the most difficult time when there's been a death. And we find the more education and pre-planning and finding a reputable firm, a reputable professional who's experienced ahead of time, it just makes it so much easier. Because even with families, I sit down and they're like, well, I don't know 100% what I want. And we were like, okay, well, let's just consider that if there had been a death, you know, yesterday, and you were making these arrangements today, what would you want today? And let's get at least the roadmap for our family. Because at the time, if 90% of the things are done, you know, you leave your family to do some of the things that are meaningful to them, meaning adding the personalization to the service, or, you know, going through pictures and doing things that are going to help with the grieving process. So we say, you know, we understand that if you make these plans, that there may be some things that need to be tweaked or added to, or but those are the things that help people kind of through their grief and help them, you know, at the time of need. And I can speak to that, because when my mom died, everybody looked to me as the expert because I'd been in the business for a very long time. But all that went away because it was my mom. And at that time, I was like, you know, I was working through the process myself. So it was so good that my mom had put down things in writing and she had her wishes. And so, you know, I focused on bringing in the quilts that she had made and putting together the pictures, and she loved flowers. And, you know, I focused on the things that made me feel good. You know, she had the big stuff done. You know, I knew where she was being buried. I knew, you know, what she wanted as far as a service, but I could do the things that were really kind of good to get me through those next few days and weeks. So, you know, we just find that the more we can do, you know, to help them find ways to honor and remember the life of the person that they love, just makes it, you know, it makes it, why it's why I do what I do, is if I can help someone through this process and, you know, make it a little easier for them, you know, I mean, that's why I do this, is just to be a resource and hopefully offer a little comfort and help along the way too. I just think it can help the family during their healing process.
Oh, I think that's so true, and it's so important that we have people like both of you with expertise who are able to help provide information and education at such an important time in our lives. And we're coming to the end of our time right now, so I'm wondering, is there anything else that you would like to just mention before we close? Colby, any other thoughts that you have?
Well, I would like to say I would like to, of course, offer big thanks to you for giving us this opportunity. But I would like to leave there are several professional associations across the country, and I'm just going to mention four of them, and they have very good websites for consumers. If they have questions, they can get on these websites, and it asks, you know. They can get a lot of information from these associations. So I just wanted to mention a few, and that way people at home can do some further research. But the first one would be the International Cemetery, Cremation, and Funeral Association. They're also known as ICCFA. There's, of course, the CANA, and that's the Cremation Association for North America. And then there's the Selected Independent Funeral Homes. And that's geared toward funeral and cremation. And then the last would be the National Funeral Directors Association. And all of these have standards of excellence and are reputable associations. So I would invite anyone to go on the associated websites and find the information that's put out there.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Colby. That's a wonderful resource to have. So I'll make note of that to send out to all of our listeners. And Pam, for you, any closing thoughts that you have?
Well, I'd like to echo that, you know, thank you for having us and being so kind and letting us, you know, tell you a little bit about what we do. And, you know, one of my biggest things is just, you know, encourage people to, you know, to talk about what they want, to explore their options ahead of time, and for everyone to just try to get a roadmap for their family ahead of time. Because being both Colby and I are funeral directors, and we see both sides. We help the family when there's been a death and there's no plans. And we also sit down with them when there has been a roadmap put in place. And we do know that it is just so much easier if they have an idea. And if we can help people, you know, all across the country, get one step closer to thinking about this. We plan for everything else. This is just one more thing we can help, help people do.
Mm-hmm. And that's just a perfect message to end our interview with today, since it definitely echoes my whole message for this series is just to get people to talk and face up to the end of life and do some planning so that they feel prepared as they grow closer to that time, and so that they can have conversations with their family about these important issues. So Pam Gears and Colby Hitchcock, thank you so much for giving your time today to be here for this interview. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in. And if you enjoyed this interview, please remember to tune in every other week for a new interview. And you can go online to endoflifeuniversity.com and find out who the upcoming speakers are. You can also listen to replays there. So be sure and check that out. And until the next time, I wish you well. Take care. Goodbye.